Good evening. This is Wednesday, May 6, 2015, 6:30 p.m., and we're calling to order the May 6, 2015 Clean Water Commission meeting. Let's go through and do a roll call. If you haven't signed in, the sheet should be floating around. Dick Rylander, here. Gary Schaefer,
here.
Jim Carlson indicated he would be absent. Marie Lamana, here. Rob, all the existing people know that Rob resigned on Sunday. His job was, so we will be working to find a replacement. David Meyer,
here.
Susan Rasmussen, apparently, will not be here this evening.
Well, you know, that's the first one she's ever met, isn't it?
I don't know. Mark Steiner,
here.
And Kate Chu.
Yes.
So, we have a quorum. So, the first item on our agenda is to take a moment and introduce three new members this evening. So, I'm going to ask in order, going across from me, working the way around, take a minute or two and introduce yourself, give them a little snapshot about your background, and welcome.
I currently work at the Clark Regional Wastewater District in Engineering Development. I work in the Clark Regional Wastewater District in Engineering Development. I have a background in forestry from Syracuse University. I work for the Forest Service, and then I work at the research station down in Portland. Then started a business with my husband and got into moved to Vancouver and wound up at the district. And do a lot of volunteer with stream team and nature saving and environmental stuff. So.
Welcome. Excellent. Mark?
Mark Schneider. I'm a self-employed chemical engineer. I work in lots of different types of industry. Been doing it for about 35 years now. I'm married, raised with my family. We live in Battle Ground, Washington. My wife may join us later. My background in this is primarily due in permitting for new construction, new industry, and that sort of thing. So.
What made you decide to apply for this job?
Well, you know, it's interesting to me. It definitely applies to a lot of things that I do in on a regular basis. Although I'm typically on the on the side of the polluter. In a lot of ways, it's from the what the county's concerned about. Industry is subject to the same rules the county is in terms of NPDES permits and all those elements that fits into what I do for a living.
It's kind of I do this where I am.
Exactly.
Welcome, Mark and Kate.
Hi, I'm Kate Schultz. I live in County, obviously. I just recently graduated from Western Washington University with a degree in environmental policy and economics, so this is right up my alley. I've had a handful of internships working with NOAA Fisheries, also on state representatives on the campaign. I'm currently working at Tree Reef as an outreach associate.
So, she said, joined us on the other end of the age spectrum, too. So. Anyway, welcome all to the new members, and we hope you enjoy. Yes,
I think it would be beneficial for the new members to hear a little bit about each one of you.
Yeah. Well, they've heard about me because I interviewed them. But Gary?
I moved here in 2006 from a 32-year career at Boeing as a mechanical engineer and also as an administrator in customer services. The reason I wanted to join this commission, it's always been a passion of mine with the question of what kind of world are we leaving for our children and our grandchildren. And that is kind of what drives me is to do whatever we can to make sure that our children and grandchildren inherit the same or better environment that we have. And so that's what I really, really am looking for is trying to find ways to ensure the beauty of the earth and the cleanliness for our future generations.
David?
Oh, swung all the way over to me all the way.
Exactly.
So I introduce myself a little bit. My background is actually in forestry. Isn't that a small world? So I got my degree in range forest management, kind of launched my way into doing environmental work 35 years ago, and been involved in doing management systems and technical consulting, particularly with stormwater management. And that's why I was brought on as a member of the commission a little over a year ago for my technical background. So now I'm joined by a couple of other techies and a few other techies, so we're taking over.
As it should be.
And this actually will be good because we have a lot of work in that area to be focusing our attention on in the next year or two. So glad to have the three of you join us, and it's always good to see some fresh faces.
Thank you. Okay, next item, Earl, if you'll review the meeting packet for us this evening, please.
That's the meeting packet. It is for May 6th. So item one is the agenda for tonight's discussion. Item two is the summary from the March meeting. Item three goes over a variety of topics, one of which we'll discuss tonight is the clean water fee, or the fee study, section one. Since Mr. Carlson's not here, we won't be talking about any of the swamp-related activities, which is basically stormwater accounting management program, blah, blah, blah. And another section here is education and outreach. I'm going to show you a couple of videos. I think these videos are very important for all of us to get a good understanding as to what we're talking about. When you go to talk to somebody about stormwater, you really want to understand it yourself. So when they ask you a question about it, even if you can't answer the question, you can write it down. That's what we're encouraging. Write it down, record it, bring it back to the staff or amongst yourselves, and get a good answer for that person, and then take that answer back to the person that asked the question. So that's what I'm going to be talking about in a few minutes. Item four is the responsibilities. This is basically an excerpt out of your clean water ordinance, or out of the clean water program, that talks about what are the roles and responsibilities for this group. And so what we did, we took a look at that, modified it, so we want to give it to you folks to take a look at it and give us your thoughts as to what you think. Item five is a staff report. What I'm going to be talking about, again, is trying to set the stage so you have a good understanding as to what it is that the NPDES permit, which is the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit, is telling us. And then the other part of it is, what are we doing to comply with that permit? And that's called the 2015 Stormwater Management Plan. So I'll be talking about that for a bit. The next item is a packet of maps and places. We were asked to staff identify locations where we can take folks from this group out into the field, probably the week of the 17th or so, which is about 2 weeks from now. So go out into the field either the third week or the fourth week of May and see some of these different sites. So I'm advocating either in the morning or the afternoon, but ideally get an opportunity for people to go with us. We'll be taking a van or a couple of cars and going around to different sites. So the first one we're going to look at what is called Thomas Wetland East. Next one we're going to look at what is called Mount Vista, which is basically a rehab site. We went in there. There was a stormwater facility in that particular location, so I'm not going to talk a lot about it right now because I'll talk about it more later. But there was a stormwater facility there, so we're going to take a look at how we address that. The third one we're going to look at is another habitat site. Basically, the idea is to get away from what have been called penitentiaries. These are facilities with 6-foot black fences around them, or gray fences, or green fences, whatever. The idea is to get away from that kind of a process if we can. So I'll talk more about that later. And that's pretty much that. And then the next item is going to be an opportunity for you folks. It's not in your packet, but the next item is going to be talking about what are we going to do, who have we talked to in the past, skill sets that you have, so on and so forth. And that's pretty much the packet.
Thank you, Earl.
Yep.
The next item on the agenda is to review and approve the meeting notes from our last meeting. I presume everybody's had an opportunity to review this prior to coming in. Are there any comments or questions or alterations that you want in the meeting notes for this last meeting in March?
I have no changes.
If not, then do I have a motion to accept the meeting notes as presented?
I make a motion to accept the meeting notes.
Second. Have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Meeting notes accepted as presented. Thank you very much. you'll notice we're scooting right along because we have a fair number of things to accomplish here this evening. This would be the time that we open up for public comment. I don't see anybody. Does anybody in the public wish to make comments?
See, this is one of the things we're trying to improve. A lot of people don't even know this group exists. We've had people from Clark College, we've had people from around the community come to these meetings, and they'll say to us, we didn't even know you exist. So we're sitting here for the last 16 years, seriously, and they still don't know we exist. Part of the problem is we don't beat our drum loud enough, we don't tell people what we're doing, and I think one of the things that you have as part of your agenda, or part of your sort of your interest level, is this thing called your education and outreach group. And I think it's very important that what we do in this program, what we do in the Clean Water Program, is articulated in your education and outreach group. And again, if you can't answer a question, that's okay. Just get back to me.
However, if there's anything to do with money, we will occasionally get some people who show up.
Yeah.
Right? So if it's money. And when we talk about this a little bit later, and David will talk more specifically about some of this stuff coming up, I think our expectation is that money will start to rear its head later this year and into next year, which means that we may have more participation. But anyway, so seeing that there's nobody in the public this evening who wants to make any comments, then public comments are now closed. Okay, so the next item on the agenda, presentation, discussion, recommendation, and action. We'll start off by David's group and the Clean Water Fee
Working Group. And I'm glad that Mr. Clifford is here so he can correct anything that I might say incorrectly. But just as background, especially for the new members here, if you recall last year, there was some discussion following the settlement of the case over these how the fee was designated, that there was a shortfall of some funds, and one of the issues in order to replenish the Clean Water Fund. And consequently, some discussion arose as to the idea of generating some type of fee or a polluter pays fee associated with offsetting some of that delta that still needed to be made up. And the staff did some initial work. Staff at the county did some initial work, presented some options in which they sought some input from us as a commission. We provided feedback to them, and subsequent to that, we suggested that some further evaluation be done. They brought that information to the county counselors at that time, and they moved to set a timeline in which a fee study would then be conducted and some additional details be gathered. And that clock was running, and the sunset on the decision that they made is in June?
July.
So we convened a task force to look at various different options and what would possibly be a fair and equitable distribution or fee that could be assessed within county jurisdictions against various different types of sources or user groups, be it rural, rural residential, industrial or commercial. I may have forgotten one or two along the way. And made our recommendations again that the county staff look at gathering additional information that would then provide some basis for then presenting a more equitable and defensible fee when it were to go out to the public for consumption. So what Mr. Clifford has done is started to develop input from the staff, and what you see in item number 3 is a draft fee study, section 1. There will be 3 sections as well, and I'm going to ask Mr. Clifford to explain what the other 2 sections are in a moment. But the fee study, we felt, and and rightfully so, that providing some background on what the fee has been and doing a baseline comparison against other jurisdictions within Washington State, both local jurisdictions as well as other counties within Washington State, to provide some context would be helpful to kind of lay the foundation from which the fee evaluation would be further studied. Do you want to quickly walk the group through the essence of this document?
Yes. The document that you have in front of you is purely a draft right now. And what you'll see is there's... Thank you. There's the first few pages are basically just describing stormwater systems, the MPDES permit. The idea would be that members of the public were to read this, they could better understand. People don't understand the difference between a segregated stormwater system and a combined one. And so we covered some of those basic things. Later on, what we do is we talk about a number of the methods that are being used nationally and locally through fee systems, intensity of use, development fees,
the equivalent residential.
The ERU.
And this is on page 7 document for context.
And we most jurisdictions use pretty much kind of the same baseline, but they do have variations, and it's interesting what those can mean for us. Then what we do is we move into Clark County's fee and how what we adopted last year and how that works, how we define our ERUs and what we charge. Provided a couple of graphs comparing us with other jurisdictions, table on page 12, and then we also have a graph on page 13 that shows where we are sitting in terms of where we are next to locally and statewide some counties that are very similar to us, just to get a feel for how reasonable our fee is or is not compared to others. It then goes into the formula that we use, and it talks about how we do it. There's a table on page 15 that shows you a pie chart of how the fee is distributed throughout the county, in terms both for rural and urban residential, because that was a change we made in 2014. We divided the county. We charge a separate fee for the urban, and we charge a separate fee for the rural. The rural's coming in at $35, and the urban comes at $47. And then there's the $5 litigation surcharge on both of them. So if you're rural, you have a total fee of $40 this year for a single family residential, and if you're urban, you have, in the urban zone, you have a total fee of $52 for yours, and we talked about how that was derived. Then talk about some of the waivers that we have, some of the reductions. We talk about our green school program. I am comparing us with all their phase one NPDES counties in Western Washington, showing you what they do. Took the Walmart property out on Highway 99 and basically have overlaid what our fee is for that and then overlaid what the others would do. So if you were in King County and you were Walmart and you had the same piece of property, they are currently paying Clark County $7,200. They would pay King County around $31,600. So there's a little difference in the rate structure and the way they do it. There were some other interesting variances, like with Pierce County, some things. There's an interesting item. It's not in here, but with the city of Vancouver, which will be appearing in the later chapter. This is to the part of that we were tasked with was we were asked to look at the basically our methodology. and kind of an issue of equitability came up. Are we being fair, or are we not? And people can read this, and we're not saying one way or the other. We can look at it and compare us to others and see how we come out. One of the things is we're doing the polluter fee section.
Just part two.
Part two is the polluter pays. There's been work done by the State Department of Ecology that we didn't have last year. There's also been a study by WSU that had not been done by last year. Both of these were done in support of some work that the governor was doing legislatively. And they answer a lot of the questions that we were asking about who's contributing to the stormwater problem very specifically. And being that we are pretty tight on money, we really can't afford, nor did we have the time to engage in a very large comprehensive. Both those studies took a couple of years. There's a California highway study that we've gotten a hold of. It took them about 3 years to do it. These are very large undertakings, and so we're having to use what others have created and really don't need to reinvent the wheel. It's because it's all falling out very similar. The third chapter, and this is a part that I think for this committee is kind of the exciting part. I mean, I know it's hard to say that with committees exciting, but the fact is the third section, we are rapidly coming up. We are going to be getting a new permit in 2018. Every time we've gotten a permit, the cost of doing the permit has gone up substantially. We need to have in place in 2018, not 2 years into the permit, but starting on day one of 2018. And it's going to be up to this committee to take this report and fashion some alternative methods for our counselors to examine to generate the revenue that we know we're going to need, that we don't know what they're going to make us do, but we know every time there's a new permit, they make us do more. So it's pretty simple. And that is, I think that's the stuff, kind of the wonky stuff that I think is more exciting. That's policy making. And so that's where this is going to move from here. The ordinance only says the counselors do not accept or reject the study. They acknowledge that they received it. That's all the ordinance requires. And then we keep our fee, but then there's going to be that work afterward. And we want to be able to use this as that vehicle to start that dialogue, to give you, can we take things from Pierce County? Can we take things from Vancouver? Can we take things from St. Kitsap County? Or can we create a new concept and pursue it with that information? And it'll be for you guys to hash out and fight over.
So just to put all this in context, you're planning on providing us with sections two and three by early next week.
I was hoping to do it Friday, but if I can have the weekend, I'd appreciate it.
I think we want him to do that.
He might want to celebrate Mother's Day.
We had a small group meeting last week, yeah, in which Gary was there and Dick was there as well. And what we want to do is provide all three of these chapters to everyone to review, and then we'll give you a timeline for which you can provide your comments back. I'll consolidate those comments, provide those onto staff, and then they in turn can prepare that material for presentation to the counselors. As opposed, because we won't be meeting again probably until after they meet. So, but we want to give everybody an opportunity to review this. I know it's a lot to digest, but understand that all we need to do is acknowledge that we've reviewed this at this point in time, that it will be provided to the counselors. to review, but that heavy work really begins after that period of time, in which case it's really on us to provide really kind of sharpen our pencils and put some meat on the bone, which ultimately will be subject to public review as well. Just as context, in your binder, in annual under the annual report, Appendix B is a summary of the analysis that we did last fall, and Gary was involved, and a couple of members who are no longer with us were involved as well. Gary, did you have any additional thoughts or input?
I would like to wait until we see the rest of the package, the whole package, to make comments on, because I'm not sure what I don't know.
Absolutely. What I'm hoping is that we, once we get this document, we can have to the end of the month to have everybody, that give everybody a couple of weeks' time to review and comment and reach out to me, of course. I'll be the point contact if you have any questions. I can provide some clarity, and I'm sure Earl, Chris, if there are any comments, you'd be available.
Absolutely.
To respond or answer any questions during the review process.
Absolutely.
Great.
And Clifford has some scheduled surgery in early June.
That's
so
right.
He's trying to get it wrapped up before he ends up.
Yeah, but you guys, don't worry about it. You can call me or get me by email. I bounce back fast. I've been through
that. This has every possibility of either being a really contentious issue or being something that will be manageable in the public context. The message we sent to staff was that if any fee is going to be developed, it has to be defensible right out of the chute. Or, for lack of a better term, it's got to pass the smell test. And when it was first proposed, it didn't pass the smell test. And that's why we decided to recommend that we step back, take a harder, closer look, and then come back with a plan that will be defensible to all the stakeholders involved as well. So I think we're well on the way, and appreciate everything that you've done up to this point and the staff has done.
Yep.
So thank you very much for your efforts up to this point.
I'd like to add just...
And I would also add one thing, is that we are looking for a couple of new members, since we've lost a couple of members of the task force. Just one? So if any of the three of you are highly desirous of being part of that, feel free to reach out. And who knows, maybe after arm wrestle for it. Strong.
I'd like to also add that one of the challenges that was brought up during the 1999 outreach was the fact that the main interest of everybody who attended the meetings was we don't want to pay anything. Regardless of the reason, find somebody else to pay it. And, you know, I mean, almost irrational arguments that... no matter what the facts were, I don't want to pay anything. And I think that's what maybe David was alluding to, is that whenever you start talking about money out of their pocket, and especially increasing the money out of their pocket, for what they can see maybe as no immediate benefit return to them, you're going to have some challenges.
An important, maybe a final point so we can stay on agenda here that I want to make is that, and this is something that I learned as well, is that there may be a wide variety of options when people start saying, well, why don't we think about doing this or doing that, but the fact of the matter is there are constraints in the permit and in what the county is able to actually do that eliminate many options as well. And just even if, as I noticed as I was going through here, there's a fee that's charged to WASDOC for what they do, but under state law, that fee is reduced, 70%?
70%.
So, but the delta just on the fee alone is almost $250,000. That's a huge number right there. But you think, well, it's charged. Well, it's not. You can't do it. So that's just one example that there are some limitations by law, by code, by the permit itself that prevent us, that will prevent us from actually implementing it. So we'll have to really, truly understand what those limitations are as we forge forward.
So I guess what we're anticipating potentially is that starting sometime in July, if you have a July meeting, assuming that the report's been presented to counselors, the counselors have made some comments, that we probably then move into a phase of starting to develop some suggestions, probably a series of public meetings once some framework is constructed and giving input, et cetera.
That could be next year.
Could be next year. And so, and then we don't know yet what that time frame is, but you know, I guess if we had to guess, they'd probably say, come back to us in a year. And make some recommendations and so forth. So it will be an interesting time, and hopefully we'll see more bodies showing up in the audience to make their.
Start talking about this stuff, you know.
Money. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Gary. Jim Sontier from the swamp side of things. Rob was a member of the swamp team. Etc. So I'll be following up with Jim. The education and outreach, Earl's going to show a couple of videos in a moment, but just some background. I've been working with staff to take the previous slide presentation, which was quite large and a little bit dated, and trying to condense it into a presentation that is doable in maybe 10 minutes, and that's a fairly large task. Earl's also been up to his ears in alligators answering public comments, questions about the fees. So he's been inundated in, you know, one-offs on why am I paying this and why am I paying that, et cetera. So we're continuing to try to get a slide deck whittled down to be able to share with you that encompasses all these different pieces. In the meantime, on the outreach side of things, we did have a interaction with the Clark County Neighborhood Association representing the various neighborhood associations around Clark County. We got some feedback and some information from them. Subsequently, I met with Sunrise O'Mahony, who is a woman. She is the executive director of the Vancouver Watersheds Alliance, and I went to their annual meeting just get a sense of who they are. And then yesterday I spent about an hour over at Clark College with Rebecca Benson, who is the Environmental Health and Services Supervisor, and she gave me a shopping list of all the different courses and groups and programs at Clark College that we might potentially have some interactions with. And we discussed either recruiting some of their people for either special projects and or maybe being able to weave something in the curriculum in the Clark County area. So very nebulous at this point, so I'm beginning to study these different little subgroups and what they do, and so as we go along, we'll present some material and see if there's some novel ways to reach out. But as part of our ongoing outreach and education, we also have some work to do for us to make sure that we're all currently up to speed. We'll be trying to do this on an ongoing basis to make sure that our education puts us on the edge so that we hopefully know what we're talking about and helps us ask better questions. Do you want to take off?
I'm able, but yeah, I've got it.
Thank you for coming in. So, yeah, Earl, over to you.
So what I wanted to do, as I mentioned earlier, it's good that this group has an opportunity to see these videos. Some of the videos are slightly dated. And what Mr. Ryland is talking about is we want to make the slides very proactive. So the slide is going to be very current. So some of the stuff that they talk about in here, like number of facilities, that kind of stuff, somewhat dated again. So when you listen to this stuff, the essence is correct, but the numbers are not. So just be aware of that.
Advances in finding more efficient ways to do things are constantly evolving, even in stormwater management. At one time, the main goal is to move the rainwater off property, farms, and roads to prevent standing water and flooding. A network of conveyance systems was installed to direct stormwater runoff into local streams and rivers. development expansion over the decades replaced natural vegetated areas with more roofs, parking lots, and streets, increasing the volume of stormwater pouring into the waterways.
In doing that, we've been damaging our water resources, our streams and wetlands with too much water, too many pollutants. So over the years, we've learned that we need to manage the stormwater. We need to control the rates at which it's released from development sites, and we need to remove the pollutants that can be carried in stormwater before discharging those to our waterways to protect our waterways, the fish, the wildlife, the other benefits and uses that they provide.
To protect water resources and habitat, Clark County constructs various public stormwater facilities and requires new developments to treat runoff generated from their site.
We do things like build detention ponds. And detention really detains the water. It slows it down. It will collect it as it runs off the site, hold it, and release it at a slower rate. We've used grassy swales. We use cartridge filter systems. The thinking is sort of changing around control and conveying water.
Some recent advances in controlling and treating stormwater involve changing how developments are planned and constructed. With the update to the stormwater ordinance and a new stormwater manual, the county is encouraging low-impact developments and best management practices for new developments.
What we tend to do is remove all the natural capital from the site and then build our projects. But what that does is really puts us at a disadvantage because that natural capital that's in place does a very, very good job of managing stormwater. The trees, the native vegetation does a tremendous job of keeping stormwater from even hitting the ground, capturing it, evapotranspiring it back to the air. Native soils, sort of undisturbed, have a ton of capacity for holding stormwater.
Besides planning how best to minimally impact a development site, to save as much native vegetation as possible for natural capital, there are a number of best management practices or sustainable techniques to treat stormwater at the source.
Then the individual techniques that we can use are more decentralized stormwater management, the idea of not necessarily collecting it from all over an entire development site, running it to one point and treating it there and detaining it there. The idea is to disperse it, to treat it at the source and to manage it at the source and let as much of it infiltrate into the ground as possible.
These sustainable techniques, which mimic natural processes, include rain gardens, planter strips, curb extensions, impervious concrete and asphalt. To promote public awareness of sustainable stormwater practices, Clark County has constructed two natural drainage demonstration sites. One is a rain garden next to the county's public service center.
We had two swales that treat the county's parking lot. We transformed one of the swales into a demonstration rain garden to show folks what it would look like. We brought in soil that meets the requirements for a rain garden, and that soil plays a really important part in removing pollutants. Have planted with native wetland and upland plants, appropriate soil mixtures, and people can come out and see these in practice and see that while swales are effective ways of removing pollutants, sometimes some of the secondary benefits of these rain gardens are that they look better, they look nicer, they're easier to maintain.
The other public demonstration project is a curb extension at Northeast 113th Avenue and Northeast 96th Street. Much like a rain garden with native plants and soil, a curb extension captures rainwater running down the curb line that would otherwise go down the storm drain. The county plans to construct other sustainable stormwater demonstration projects over the next year.
The thinking about stormwater management is changing all the time. We're learning what's working, we're learning what's not working, we're learning what may be giving us a long-term and expensive maintenance burden well into the future, and we're learning what might be more sustainable, not only from an environmental standpoint, but from a public funding standpoint. I think we're really poised to really change the way of thinking and change how our landscape is developed and really bring the community together to make sure we attain our goals of protecting water resources and helping protect people's pocketbooks as well.
For their efforts to promote more sustainable stormwater methods to protect Clark County's water resources, the staff of the Clean Water Program received this month's Our Personal Best.
So what you saw in this slide, you had some of the material in there, some of the numbers are old. And the other slide here, the second one I'm going to show you, is older, but again, it shows a bit more of the breadth of the discussion. It also shows that we're working with other jurisdictions, like the City of Vancouver, Washougal, Dalaman, and some of these other places.
We're
actively working with other folks. So watch this slide.
Industrial wastewater. It's the stormwater that runs off roofs, roads, parking lots, and other art surfaces every time it rains in the wet northwest.
Forests and pastures act as natural sponges that soak up rain and melting snow on the spot. As areas continue to urbanize, pollution problems associated with poorly managed stormwater become more pronounced. Unlike pollution from industrial sources, stormwater pollution is something that we all contribute to.
Rain becomes stormwater when it hits the ground and carries away with it pollutants such as chemicals, fertilizers, pet waste, dirt. Many of our streams in Clark County are degraded due to human activities that have impacted water quality, stream flow, and biological health of our streams.
Unlike municipal sewage, stormwater that goes into storm drains does not flow through pipes to a wastewater treatment plant. Instead, stormwater is carried through a network of ditches and pipes before it's flushed into our streams and waterways or soaks into the ground, often carrying with it contaminants that can cause serious harm to fish and other aquatic life, as well as to our drinking water aquifers. Heavy runoff during larger storms can erode stream banks, filling up salmon spawning beds with sediment and destroying riparian vegetation that helps keep water cold and healthy for fish. Keeping pollution out of stormwater is about more than just doing what's right for the environment. It's also about protecting property and public health. It's also the law. That's why new developments are required to control and treat stormwater before it leaves their property, and the owners of such treatment systems are required to properly maintain them.
Local governments have responsibilities under the Federal Clean Water Act and through the Washington State Department of Ecology to monitor stormwater, control stormwater, monitor that stormwater facilities are being properly maintained, and to help educate the public on their responsibilities of keeping our surface waters clean.
There are many types of stormwater systems in use throughout Clark County and its cities. It's a mixture of facilities and structures, everything from modern systems that use the latest underground technology to roadside ditches dating back to the 19th century.
Behind me here is a typical biofiltration swale, which is the most common facility we see in Vancouver. And really that just means a biological filtration system, just what it says. These are grass-lined ditches, typically, with a inlet structure and an outlet structure, and they're designed so that they slow down the stormwater flow through that grass, filter out pollutants into that swale so that they don't get into water resources downstream.
Other recognizable stormwater facilities are storm drains or inlets, which may use sumps or traps to capture debris, along with large ponds or wetlands that collect stormwater and can also provide additional treatment and habitat for waterfowl and other wildlife. There are also less visible systems, such as underground vaults that rely on stormwater treatment cartridges to filter out pollutants. Regardless of the type, all modern stormwater systems are designed to capture, hold, and reduce pollution from urban runoff, and they all need regular maintenance. Local governments are responsible for maintaining public stormwater facilities, but homeowners associations and other property owners may also be responsible for maintenance where private facilities have been installed. Clark County, not county cities, has more than 800 privately owned and maintained stormwater facilities.
But there are some homeowners that don't know what happens to stormwater once it leaves their property. In fact, some homeowners in Clark County have a legal responsibility to maintain their stormwater facilities that treat and detain stormwater before it flows into our streams and lakes.
Throughout the area, local government staff work closely with stormwater facility owners, offering technical know-how to help solve these kinds of problems. At Wankey Meadows, Clark County officials provided technical expertise, and residents provided the labor and money needed to get the job done.
That was the bad news, good news. You know, first was us being told the bad news that we needed to take care of it. Then we started working with the county, the maintenance people in particular, and they came out and gave us a lot of good advice. Here's what you need to do. You know, we could have tried to guess at a lot of this, but then we would have still not known if we were in compliance when we got done or not. So it was helpful to have the county come out and say, well, if you do this and you take care of that.
Wankey Meadows is a living example of a good stormwater partnership between local government and those responsible for maintaining private facilities. It's all about working together.
When we talk about water quality and stormwater management, we're really talking about pollution prevention. That's ultimately the most effective and least expensive way to keep pollutants out of our surface and groundwaters. And we found when working with private homeowners on maintaining their stormwater facilities, that means technical assistance and outreach.
It's important that people stay on top of their facilities maintenance. neglecting to do regular inspection and maintenance can lead to expensive facility repairs. Depending on the condition of the facility, maintenance could be routine, such as periodic mowing. But if a facility has been neglected for years, it might be clogged with sediment and overgrown with vegetation and require more work. A stormwater facility that meets their code requires only periodic maintenance.
Your local city or county will help you with this. They'll offer up free inspection services and help guide you along, give you advice on what needs to be done. The solution here is to try and get all the private HOAs and stormwater facility owners in compliance through education and outreach, not through legal means, which we have at our disposal if need be, but that is the last resort.
Stormwater does not have to be a waste or a nuisance. Some detention ponds can be an asset to beautify an area. For individual property owners, well-maintained rain gardens, which manage stormwater before it even leaves the yard, are another option to explore. Rain gardens and other new ways of managing stormwater are some of the simple steps we can all take toward reversing decades of environmental degradation.
Unfortunately, there are no quick and easy cures to improve stream health. It took us a long time to create this problem, and may take even longer to solve it. But the good news is that all of us can help protect our streams by minimizing and even eliminating the impacts of stormwater. Your local governments are doing their part, and we need citizens of Clark County to step up and help.
It all starts with recognizing the potential threat that poorly managed stormwater poses to the health of our environment and enjoyment of our abundant water resources. We all contribute to the problem, and we all need to be part of the solution. Please join your neighbors and your local government in making a commitment to do your share.
So one of the things you heard, they talk about stormwater facility, it's right off the back of the facility of this building. So behind the parking lot, on the west side of the parking lot, there's a stormwater facility out there. So anytime you want to drive by, either this evening, take a look, since you're here, or anytime you want to drive by and just take a look at it, you can see what was further to the west is the existing facility. And then the modified facility is the one that's closest to the parking lot area. So we did a fairly expensive rehab out there. It wasn't a lot of money, but it was just something we started because we wanted to try it on our own. We wanted to see what's going to happen if it blows up. Well, it's our fault. But if it works, and it does work. So fortunately, it worked. It worked out fine. So I think at this point, we'll go ahead and go to the next part of the presentation.
Okay. Any questions? Yeah, if you notice, those are both on YouTube.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen the links or you want the links, we can
I'll provide them in the notes.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is proposed modifications to section 1338.040. At our previous meeting, we discussed the feedback that we got from the county counselors where they suggested that if we felt there was value in reviewing and making modifications, we should do so. And if we didn't, we shouldn't. It's entirely up to us. What you have in front of you is the combined efforts of us and staff to go back through. Some of the changes are actually just contextual. Instead of county commissioners, now they're county counselors. So we cleaned up some of the language and so forth. And I don't know if you've had an opportunity to review and you have any comments you want to share now. I actually didn't and don't intend to take a lot of time at this meeting. What I am requesting is that in a reasonable period of time, that if you do have any suggestions, questions, or comments about any further changes or modification, et cetera, to share those with us. Yes, David?
Just as clarification here, I recall a few months back that we had been having this discussion about how we would stagger the appointments.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I can't, please remind me, as to what was decided at that point, whether
sure,
we're going to keep it as is, or whether this
we would go through a calendar year basis, January through December, and they would continue with their 3-year appointments.
So that's reflective.
That's this is updated to match that that we accepted as a change in our bylaws as well. So yes, that's consistent. So you'll note that. Well, but if you went back and compared the items 1 and 2, which are clarifications or some additional detail, are additions as well for your consideration. So what we're looking to do is to see whether we want to adopt some of these changes and if you have anything else that you want so that we can then actually
at an appropriate time, go back to the county councilors and say, this is some changes that we want to make, and some sort of cleaning it up. And this, the original one, you recall, for those who were here, is that the original responsibilities were produced in 1999, and they hadn't been touched in all the ensuing time. Certainly things do change to some degree. There's no major modifications other than mostly cleaning some things up and adding some clarifications. So I'm happy to take comments at this point, or if you have some, we'd really like to hear them, you know, in the next couple of weeks, if at all possible, and that way we can circulate.
Or just put out a due date.
Okay, June 1st. Okay, that way to get feedback, if we can have it in by June 1st. And if we don't get feedback or any other comments from you, we'll presume you believe it's acceptable as is. Okay. Next item is the staff report on the permit.
So one of the things I talked about in the past, what I think is very important, is for us to have a really good understanding of what is in this thing called the NPS permit. I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, so if you ask me a technical question, at the end I'm going to give you some names that you can call. If you ask me a simple question, I can answer that. That's my precursor. The idea here is to say to all of you, and then anyone that talks to you, if you don't have an answer, and you ask me this question, I'm going to write it down and give it to the people that I have at the end of this presentation. The bottom line is, what's really important is that the NPDES permit says to Clark County, you shall do these various actions and activities. And then, as was mentioned earlier, the actions and activities don't get to be less. In 1999, when we started this permit, it went from basically zero to $33. That was the economic side, so we had to get everybody to understand that. Then we had to get everybody to understand, why are we doing all this? And the bottom line here is that what I'm going to be talking about, this came as a requirement from the U.S. Congress through the Clean Water Act. And the Clean Water Act said, thou shall do all these wonderful things to protect surface water and, in some cases, groundwater. With all that being stated, we wanted to come back and say, okay, who's going to force this? And what we learned in 1999, as Mr. Schaefer has said, no one wanted to pay anything. So I remember I had several people who said, churches said, I'm going to hell, at least three times, so any man didn't incarnate here, but anyways, the bottom line is what I'm trying to say to you is all of this stuff means a lot to people when we start talking about money. All of this stuff means a lot to the state when we start talking about procedures, performances, and if we talk about kids, it means a lot to you as a family person. You want your kids to live in an environment where when they put their foot or hand in the water, they don't pull that out into something else, on their hands or feet. So that's the intent. The intent is to make sure whatever goes from the stormwater system, and let me make it very clear. The stormwater pollution system, it is a pollution system. It's just like sanitary sewer, but we don't have other stuff in there. We have a variety of pathogens, pollutions, oil products, chemical products in general, and sometimes bacteria stuff. Basically from dogs, cats, and whatever. So the point is, it's dynamic. And just think of, you know, you look out this window or something like that, all that stuff that's out there is going into your stormwater. So Vancouver, I think, has separate, I think they have part of the system is separate, other parts is combined. We heard earlier about combined and separate. When you read that report that Mr. Christopher put together, you'll see that in some places in the country, like Portland, one of the big issues is that they have a combined sewer system. That's why they're doing this big pipe project over there, $1 billion project. So we don't have that, fortunately, in Clark County. We were either too stupid or too naive to do that. So we have a separate system. We'll talk about it just a little bit. But the bottom line is, whatever we do, we have to meet these state requirements. Now, these state requirements come from the Department of Ecology. Ecology is the group of folks that administer the Clean Water Act for the state of Washington. And what they do, they establish what they call Phase 1 and Phase 2 permittees. The Phase 1 permittees were established in the 1990 census. If you had a population of 100,000 or more, then you became a Phase 1 permittee.
even if your population today dropped below 100,000, you are still a phase one permittee. It's like a triple hook. Once you're hooked, you're bogged in there and you're not getting off. Phase twos came in a little later, about 2010 roughly, and they're also, if they were a certain size, I think 20,000, 10,000, 20,000, so don't quote me on that number. But they came in, and now they're on, but they don't have to do as many things as we do as phase ones. Phase ones have to basically, for simple purposes, they have to do 10 things, and phase twos have to do 8 things or 6 things. So they have much lower threshold that they have to meet. One of the things I'm going to talk about in this product, this is the product that we're looking at. It's called Phase One Municipal Stormwater Permit, and it's a general permit from the Department of Ecology. It talks about ways that we protect our water. There's certain acts, certain requirements, there's RCWs in here for surface water and for groundwater, and there's a number of very procedural like actions and activities. They say that thou shalt do this at a certain time frame. Thou shalt do all these other wonderful things as well within a certain time frame. So there's a host of actions and activities that I'll go through very quickly. Bottom line is, we have to do all of them. Now we get this new permit. It started in 1999. We're on a fourth permit here in 2013, and we'll be on a new permit in 2019. So the bottom line is, we have all these different permits, and each one stacks upon the other. Because I remember quite clearly, somebody asked me, one of the former commissioners at that time, said, what are we doing? Where's the money coming from? So I had to literally sit down and go, where's the money coming from? So I had to break it down like you have in Chris's report, break it down by rural and urban. Where's the money coming from? As you said, sir, where it comes from as far as roads go, state roads. We had to break it down by state roads, county roads, where's the money coming from? So what I did, I literally just sat down one day, several weeks, and went through all of this stuff and said to myself, where's the money coming from? Basically, where the money's coming from, a third of it, with the roads, state and highway, state and local roads, comes from the rural area. The other two-thirds comes from the urban area. So I sat down and said, and now where's the money going? That's the other part of the question. Well, it goes to a variety of places, and I'll talk about that in a minute. It goes to basically doing all the permit stuff that's in here, which is education, monitoring, enforcement, capital projects, enforcement. What else is there? There's another one. I can't think of it right now. There's a variety of projects and activities that we have to do in here. And so if you were to look at it as a pie chart, what I'll do for you folks, too, is I'll create basically where's it coming from chart and where's it going chart. We'll get that in the future. So that'll be something to look forward to. And what'll say is, the money comes from a variety of places. But with all those places, where's it going? And here's the bottom line questions. During this last several months of addressing these fee complaints that I get, I call them fee disputes, somebody says, I don't want to pay my $40. I don't want to pay my $1,600. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. Some of it is just because they don't want to do it, and some of it, there's a technical reason. When they say that they don't want to do it, I have to say, I have to charge you this fee. I have to charge you this amount of cost because we have to do all these things. And they'll go, why is it a benefit on my property? And I said, you might not see it on your property, but it might be a mile down the road. It will certainly be within your area of your influence. It may be in the watershed. So then I have to explain what a watershed is. By the time I get through with that, then I don't want to hear anymore. So, but the bottom line is, what I really wanted to do is make sure people understand what we're talking about and then have the ability to have appreciation for what we're talking about. When I start talking about kids, generally speaking, what they want to do is make sure that their daughters, granddaughters, sons, grandsons, all that are safe when they get in the water. So that's what we'll be talking about for the moment. So what you see in this first slide, let me just open the simplest slide. So in 2013, this permit started in 2013, it's going to go to 2018. What we're striving to do, and I'm in your way, just put me out of the way. But what we want to do is make sure that we have all the places, all the things that we want to do to make sure that we're in compliance. One of the things that somebody asked me a while back, how do we know if our permit is successful? How do we know that we're in compliance? How do we know that we're doing the right thing? I can say with a straight face that if we don't do the right things per the permit, Ecology has this little form, they call it G20. But what it is really a violation form. And we would have to report to the state what are we not doing in the permit. And what that translates into is a situation or an issue where you or a technical person that you have can come and do a third-party lawsuit. So the litigation that you heard about earlier today was because a third-party lawsuit was initiated against Clark County for violating the permit. What we did, we thought we could go and do basically mitigation for development of doing what they call forest practicing, replanting trees, and we sort of turned left, And the state knows that you have to turn right. And then the third-party lawsuit people got into the mix, and they said, you need to be turning right, like the state said. And so we didn't. We have a person who said, no, we're going to stay left, and that's what happened. And then what happened with that, then it went to litigation at the state level, went to litigation at the federal level. We lost both the state courts and the federal court, and the federal judge said, if I hear another word where Clark County is going to be violating the Clean Water Act, he goes, I'm really going to put the hammer down, quote unquote. So the idea is to make sure that we don't violate. In fact, we have the same people who sued us sitting on the wings waiting for us to fail. So if this group can't get it together, and council can't get it together, the federal court will make sure we get it together. And then the problem then becomes, when, will we have control of our program, or will the EPA or ecology jump in and do the enforcement for us? So one of the things we're trying to avoid, and that's a little background too, in 1999, we didn't do this program out of the pleasure of wanting to do it. We were sued back then, too. We were sued by a different group of environmental folks that said, you shall do this. And so we were able to settle out of court then, too, which created this program 16 years ago. So what we're doing here today, you know, what is the permit? Like I said, it involves the U.S. Department, basically U.S. EPA, and then also involves the Department of Ecology. Those are the administrators. EPA is at the top. Ecology is right there at the state level. What they do then is they'll tell us how we're going to do this. So they basically dictate to us, I'll be blunt, they dictate to us how we're going to do this. So they say in the permit, thou shalt do this, thou shalt do that, and have a number of sections in there that they talk about. So they come back and they say, well, okay, you guys shall do it, and then you give it to the Department of Environmental Services, and we implement it. And then we work with sister agencies and departments. We work with Flood Control Wastewater. We work with the City of Vancouver, Ballarat, and all these other jurisdictions to make sure that we have good coordination between what we do and what they do. In other words, if there is some effluent or discharge that goes into their system, comes in our system, we notify them. If it comes out of our system, goes into their system, we have to notify them. They notify us. So what's required? So what's required is this. We work with general permits. We work with the permit, and in the permit, don't ask me about all this stuff because I'm not going to be able to tell you. So they have all these different components, and so what we try to do is we do this kind of stuff. We break it down, and these are the different areas that they talk about. We have to be able to make sure that we have legal authority, the codes, requirements, all the way through reporting, so that when we do something, we take it back to the state and say, aha, here's what we've done this past year, give us credit for that, and then we go on to the next phase. Where we have them to be more so is these parts. We talk about legal authority. We have to make sure that we have the codes, the requirements, all the procedures that are in place for development, or anything that goes on in the environment that will cause some kind of degradation. Basically, what we're saying is there might be cases where sediment washes off property. We have to make sure that the sediment's not going to wash off the property, it stays put. We have to teach people not to pour dirt onto the road, barf onto the road, sand onto the road, making sure that whatever they do on that property, if there is some kind of meatball pen? I'll just
proceed.
Anyway, what we need to do is just make sure that all the activities stay on the property itself, that it doesn't go off to some other place, which causes more harm or degradation to the streams. So we do that. We also have to make sure that there's good coordination between us, like I mentioned, between the city, good coordination between us and our departments. So if community development and or community planning, or whoever's doing planning and permitting for development, they're doing work. We need to know about that work. We need to have what are the stormwater facilities that we're talking about building, where are they at, so we can put it into our system. Which gets back to then, what is public involvement? Public involvement is basically good coordination, like as members of the Clean Water Commission, you go out and talk to your peers, you go out and talk to your neighbors, you go out and talk to your friends. That's public involvement. But it's also more than that. Let's make sure that we can adjust people's behavior so that when they go out to the community and we talk to them about this, that, or the other, how can they mitigate or minimize their impact? They have an understanding of what we want them to do. And we provide a lot of information to them. Now, whether they accept that information is another question. Another one that we're looking at is, as we go down the line here, low-impact development. That's what LID stands for. It's not local improvement districts. It's low-impact development. And if you read the permit or if you read our 2015 plan, you'll hear about that, low-impact development. So I remember I had a commission go, what the heck is low-impact development? What is LID? So we have to explain something. And if they don't understand it, there's I use this term, I go, what is the lowest common denominator? It's the person who doesn't understand it. So you have to make sure that person understands it. So when you talk to somebody, if they don't understand it, you have to explain it.
Well, Earl, also LID in some communities stands for Local Improvement District.
Right.
For instance, they want to widen a road or add a playground or something like that. So, you know, I think that maybe why they're confused about what you're talking about.
Well, if they were in the 60s, they'd have a drug culture view to it, too, wouldn't they?
You just haven't got out of the 60s yet, have
you? No, I
haven't. As far as the permit, the requirements say we have to maintain and we have to enhance our stormwater pipes. Where do those pipes come from? Where do they go? They go from, as you heard Ron Warren, you talked about earlier, from the subdivision, you don't want all that water going to one point. But what happened at that particular facility, and I'll talk about it some more later, what happened is all that water was going to one point, and the facility was overcharged. The facility was full. The facility can just handle it anymore. The facility blew out and went down the hill into Mill Creek. So we had to call FEMA, get some money from the feds, help pay for some of that. We, the Clark County folks, our tax dollars, or fee dollars, had to pay the rest of it. So we don't want to have that. We don't want to have that happen anymore. But the bottom line is, you have to do a lot of that kind of stuff. The education, you teach people where the water should go. I'm going to kind of go through this real quickly. I'll go through the rest of this. So the large projects that we're looking at, one we have to do was an extremely expensive. Basically, it's going to be probably about $500,000 to $1.5 million of code revisions, modifications. It's going to take a lot of time to get all of this stuff in place, and we're already basically. You guys were on the SAC and the TAC at one point in time, listening to that kind of stuff. So what we have these groups that we sit together. This part of education assignment. Education is also making sure that everybody who wants to be part of this, needs to be part of this, has the opportunity to participate in the overall discussion. So we have people from the Water Commission, we have people from the development committee, we have people from schools, we have people from a number of places, cities, all sitting around the table listening to what this talk is about. So, and then another one that we have to look at is low impact development. One of the major issues that we're going to have in the future is somebody's going to tell a county, I want to develop like in this room, I want to develop here. What low impact development do I need to use? And we'll say to them, you need to read what is available for that particular location, because as you know, or maybe you don't know, East Clark County is very good for drainage. West Clark County, Central and West Clark County is very bad for stormwater drainage. So we can have dry wells all we want in East County. We can have some in Central County. We can have some here in West County. But a lot of that water has to go someplace. And some of it does not go into the ground that easily. The pump, the area that I talked about behind the parking lot there, it goes to some dry wells. Fortunately, there are some dry wells out there, but it also goes to the city sanitary system. So I like to use the term stormwater system. I don't like to use sanitary separate sewer system, because that gets people mixed up with sewer. Some people just use that, but I don't like to use it. It's a stormwater system, so we have clear understanding of that. What happens here is that we have a system where it's combined. We don't want it to be combined. We want it to be separate. So that's the LID portion. The LID portion is basically it's going to be where the developer comes in. They want to develop this particular area. And we say, okay, and they ask us what system they should use. We give them some suggestions, but then it's up to them to make sure it works. So they're going to have to have pretty strenuous tests that they're going to have to go through. And that's what we're going to do now. We're going to all of these different modifications, and that's what we're going to have to deal with. So we'll be back with some more SAC and TAC meetings. I think you're on the TAC right now.
No.
So you're on the TAC. So those meetings will be coming back to life here in the very near future. So anyways, TAC is technical advisor, and SAC is stakeholder advisor. So now we get into the plan, and what the plan is basically, like I said before, the budget for 2015 and 16 is $13.4 million. This program, the increase in the permit is going to cost us really $1.5 million. So if someone were to ask you, what's this program going to be costing us, it's going to cost us, like I said, it all stacks upon each other. It never goes down, and I'll talk about some more in a minute. It never goes down. So what we have to do is figure out what can we do, where do we get the money, why are we doing all these different functions and activities. And some people said, let the state sue us, let these third-party people sue us. That's great, and great as part of the idea or concept. The problem is we're going to lose each and every time, and we have a history of losing. So if you find a jurisdiction that wins, let me know, I want to get a trade secret. So you know, this is the classic example where You know, dirt gets into the water, turbidity gets into the water, and as dirt gets into the water, it's not just dirt or cement. We have to know that oftentimes chemicals, metals, petroleum products often attenuate or stick to that dirt. So wherever that dirt lands, wherever that dirt goes, there's going to be a pollution. And then the other part of it is when that dirt settles, or soil settles, or whatever you want to call it, when that turbidity settles down on the surface of the creek or the stream, it's going to smother up basically salmon habitat and other kinds of aquatic life in a particular location. So these are the things I'm looking at. These are the things you're going to find in the 2015 report. And the 2015 report is also on the web. So if you go to Environmental Services, and you go to Clean Water, and then you go to Stormwater Management, that's where you're going to find this report. So one of the things that we have to do in the program, in our plan, is to go to, this is your 2015 manual that we have, okay? It's full of wonderful stuff, wonderful reading. If you want to be excited, this is the book to read. But it provides you some information that basically says, what are the ways that we are meeting our permit? So one of the ways that we're meeting our permit, we have to sit there and say, we have to map all of our stormwater facilities, each and every one. As happened in this last round, as the size of the pot, as the size of the pipes get bigger, we have to map those too. Previous one we didn't have to, this one we do. We have to identify all of the discharges. Where are all these systems discharging in? What streams? How fast? All this kind of information has to be documented, has to be put into the report that March 31st of every year goes to the Department of Ecology as part of your annual statement that what we do is correct. By the way, the things that we have to continue with,
would you say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't miss that. I missed that last part.
What's that?
What you just said.
Oh, what I was going to say here, the things we have to do, we have to continue doing what we're already doing. That's the point here, and then we have to continue doing more mapping. So all this stuff I'm showing you now, this whole laundry list is probably hard to read. But anyways, those are all the things we have to do. So there's a laundry list of stuff that we have to do. And then as we kind of go through all this, so we have to do maintenance operations. And these are some of the things we do. We have to mow the grass. We have street sweeps. Street sweeping. We have to clean out these catch basins or these underground vaults. So you have a guy and crew going out and doing all this stuff in public facilities. They have to do the same thing in private facilities. So they have to hire, if you're a homeowners association representative, you have to hire somebody to clean out those walls. So these are the things that we're doing on a routine basis. We have to take care of this kind of pollution. We have to make sure that if we know of the pollution, there's a spill or something like that, we have to document that. We have to tell ecology where the spill is, if it's a certain size. If it's a certain size, then they come down and do an assessment, and then they'll decide what to do. We have to continue to do all our stormwater capital planning, because none of this stuff goes away. I mean, seriously, it just doesn't go away. We have to be sure that what we do, we have the ability to make sure that people understand what kind of capital planning are we doing. And I'll talk about this more. We're trying to get away from the old style stormwater facilities, which in some cases were these deep holes in the ground that had some grass growing in them, had some weeds growing in them, had a variety of junk in them. And then what we would do, we would put these fences around them and call them good. So what we're trying to do is get away from that as much as possible. In some cases, we still may not be able to do so. Restrictions on basically protection of life is there. So if a baby or a kid falls into that thing and it's got a super steep wall of 4 or 5 feet, they're not going to get out. Even if you're out, they're not going to get out. So in some cases, we still have to fence those or require the private sector to fence them as well. What we're striving to do is get away from all this and get to something that's much more attractive. And again, I'll talk about that in just a moment. But here's a good example. We have to continue all our capital work. We have to continue all our stormwater work. We have to continue all of the ways of making sure that our stormwater facilities are functional. So this is a place that we're going to go to as part of the water tour that I talked about earlier, where we're going to go to this place called Thomas Wetland East. We don't have any fences around it. It's a slope, nice, so that if a kid falls in the water or anybody falls in the water, they can crawl out. The other thing that this facility does, and I'll talk about it more too, is it provides aesthetics. So if you're looking at this facility, this one here was still in construction at the time of the photo. It's done. It's complete. Go out there tomorrow, want, wherever, there's some maps that you can go out and view. But we'll have a tour of these places. So what I want to do later on is talk a little about where we're going.
Do those facilities remain wet through all through summer?
I can't say that. I don't know. I think they do.
Okay. I mean, how do you control things like, you know, mosquito infestation?
Well, that's a good question. So what we do, what we've done in the past, same question. And nothing but mosquito breeding grounds that we get told lots and lots. So what we do, we coordinate our efforts with what's called a mosquito district. And what they do, they have different kinds of techniques. A pill that you can put in the water, kill the larvae, and then there's a spray that they use too that covers the surface so that it smothers.
And that doesn't contaminate the water?
No, it's not supposed to.
Oh,
it's supposed,
okay,
to be, it's supposed,
right,
to be environmental friendly.
Yeah.
Okay, that was the kind of stuff. So these are the different things for source control. We have to do, basically, we have to update as part of the code manual that we're going to be working on. One of the things we have to do is update the codes for basically business practices. We have to also make sure that municipalities understand what they're doing and how they're doing their work. We have to make sure that the citizens know what they're doing. When they go out and start doing different actions and activities, they have a clear understanding of what things they need to do. So we're updating our manuals. So one of the things we're going to update is the business manual. It talks about who does what. The codes that we work on as far as departments, making sure that they understand what they need to do. Because we have different departments that are involved in stormwater practices. We have us as the overseer. The public works does most of the construction, most of the implementation of and inspection of stormwater facilities, public and private. And then also, we have general services who's involved in a lot of this. General services is sort of an enigma. What they do, they own some facilities in different places. In fact, they own this facility here. They maintain this facility. They own facilities in and around the county. They do a lot of maintenance of county places. Public works does maintenance of county roads, pipes, and stuff like that throughout the community. So these are the people that I was talking about. If you have a detailed question that you want to talk about, or a detailed answer that you need answered from them about all of what I just talked about today, I would talk to any one of these guys. Or call me, and I'll get that comment to them, and they can answer that question. So you don't feel like you're left out, because I'm certainly not the expert on this stuff. So it's just a good place to contact those people. It's in your pack of materials. And so we have an opportunity to go through this material. We have questions out wherever you have issues on. It's a technical issue. I would refer that to them. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? What we're going to try to do is make sure that we have an ongoing educational update, clarification component to each of our meetings so that we're staying on top of this so that we're as knowledgeable as we can be given the given amount of time that we're involved and we know where to turn to get answers. All part of the answer. Earl, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next item on the agenda, Jim was actually going to cover this because he approached me on it, so I'll cover it in his stead. I want to throw something out on the table for you guys to consider. Apparently, a couple of years ago, Jim made a presentation to the then members of the Clean Water Council suggesting that there would be value in doing a couple of things. One, setting everybody up on a Gmail account. And what he had proposed was last name, your last name, .ccwc for Clark Clean Water Commission, @gmail.com, so there's a uniformity to an email address. And then using the ability of the Google tools and the repository for documents so that any materials, presentations, documents could be stored in the folder that everybody would then have access to, and so that any changes or modifications, you could actually use the Google tools as well, so that everybody was always using the same set of tools, the same versions of the tools to look at, make modifications, and so forth. That'll become a central repository. So that was the recommendation or suggestion he made at the time. This was prior to him becoming the chair at the time. Any more history?
Well, none of you were there, so I can say it's good that there's a new set of faces here. Because back then, people were less receptive to it. I don't know why. I guess it was new technology, new way of thinking. But the bottom line was, it's just a way, what he was trying to do, he was trying to make people coordinated and maybe a little bit more progressive. I think this group probably will be a better fit for that. So anyways, that's what he tried to do, and they just gave me a blank stare.
A couple of questions. Number one, well, there's also a program called Dropbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes.
You can do the same thing. But
where you can put documents, yes.
You can do the same thing as well.
Collaborative.
Yeah.
it's not quite as full as Strep Doc, but the nice thing is they have Google Docs. So you can all just write in there. Right, it saves all time.
But we also, I mean, also we have our own website, you know, to put right documents and things like that on it. We are common digital bylaws on that page also. So I would just
sure. Well, the concept and when he brought it up to me, and then I followed up with Earl to find out some of the past history and so forth. Just the thing, just personally, that appeals to me is that one of the challenges, some people use Apple. Some people use PC. Some have the Microsoft Office suite of products for Word and Excel and PowerPoint, and other people don't have those things. And some people use the LibreOffice or the, you know, the free Office suites and different versions of that, et cetera. So what personally appeals to me is that you have this sort of a centralized place, and yeah, there are several ways to do it. The fact that if you use an approach on an email address, then it's absolutely consistent that way. And then the ability to tie the other things in. This is obviously, Jim approached, he and I talked about, like I said, followed up with Earl to find out the past history. So I'm just kind of, Jim and I want to throw that out onto the table. You don't have to make a decision at this point. But at least ask you to mull on it and think about it and see whether you think there is sufficient value to sort of start moving us in that direction.
Well, my thinking is that if we're working with documents and dynamically changing those, editing those, something like that could be handy. One thought I do have, though, is that as members come and go from this commission, mm-hmm. we want to make sure that once, for instance, people exit, they're termed out, or whatever the reason might be, is that they no longer have to put that access at their, you know, email account. Somebody within the county would have to control, would have to be the administrator for those accounts so that they can.
Well, Jim said that he actually, at that time when he did this, he went to the extent of actually setting up the email accounts for everyone and saying, here, it's already ready to go. That's what he told me, that he had done at that particular point in time.
But still, that wouldn't necessarily allow that user to delete their account, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we also asked staff as to, you know, whether there were any issues, and they said so long as they had the same access and the same capabilities,
right.
that they would be no issue on their side of things.
What is your concern, David?
Concern is that if somebody leaves the commission, that they would still have access to documents that would only be visible to current members of the commission.
I believe you can uninvite people. I could be incorrect on that. But you can easily, even if they have an email still active, mm-hmm. you can just uninvite them from the group. They wouldn't be able to see any of the documents.
Okay.
It's my understanding as well, from an administrative standpoint.
It's a security issue that I have, and I'm sure that there are safeguards in there. It's just something we're going to consider. And then, I don't know from a public records perspective how that needs to be managed, if it's even an issue at all.
Well, the only thing that would be an issue is if on that, within that domain where this material is residing, it becomes then what would be a final product. Then it comes to this group, then it becomes a public domain document.
But then it would go onto the website when it's a public domain.
Right.
But all your drafts, you wouldn't need to. So if you guys would have had this when you were building the annual report, it would have been easy for you to go and put your comments right on the annual report. And then it's either accepted or rejected by your chair.
Right.
And you guys all could have been working on it collaboratively at the same time instead of you worked on yours and submitted your comments to him.
Emailed
and you worked on
and
yours
and
submitted
it
over. And then he was responsible for trying to put it all into one document.
Part of this is very selfish, and that is trying to simplify things as much as possible.
Yeah, right.
And yet coordinating the efforts so that everybody... And for me, the other piece is the same set of tools, because there are these challenges of different systems and everything else that can be a cross-purpose.
Word has revision tracking. You just have to have Office to be able to
have that facility to be able to do.
But if you have office and he has Libre,
right,
then it doesn't
you're
work.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, and they don't cross over well. I know this for a fact. I've used them both. Things work in one and not the other. So
we all end up using crayons and emailing.
so that's what Jim, I think, would have tossed out of the table on doing it instead is we're just going to ask you to think on it, mull on it. We'll follow up with you, and if you think it's reasonable, then we'll work on the specific details and be able to address accessibility, inviting, uninviting, and controls that go with that. And if we went down that path, then again, it's potentially your last name .ccwc@gmail.com. I use several different Gmail addresses. I don't know if any of the rest of you do. And so what's beautiful for me is that I can just click sign out on one and it pops up the list of the other ones I have and I can click those and log right in. So it's super simple whether you're on a home PC or whether you're on a mobile device as well. So it's slick and easy to go with that. So
you can even do it on
and, you, and they've got full calendars. Yeah, that is the point as well. So it's easy to keep a group calendar for tracking of things that are planning out and suggesting giving the feedback. Anyway, obviously I'm attempting to sell it because I think it's a good idea, but selling is in my nature. So.
And from a public record standpoint, the stuff you guys are working on that's in draft that you haven't brought to the public to a meeting like this, though we don't have there's not a reason to keep that stuff. When you get to a final product, those would go to the website at that point, and those would become public documents. And yes, there would be record keeping on those. But for you guys having your little group meetings and you're trying to schedule a get together so you can share with each other, that stuff doesn't need to be in a public setting. So that doesn't have a public records retention requirement.
Well, you're absolutely right. You could even do those meetings by phone, you know, multiple, you know, phone party line or whatever you want to call it, where you have several people on the line at once.
Well, Jim actually had me test with him a free conference calling service. There's several of them, but he had one, so he invited me one day. He and I had a conference call on whatever it was, the pre-conference service, just to make sure it worked, because he was thinking that for some of the swamp interactions with different groups, that doing it by phone could actually make it easier to coordinate time and effort. So he wanted to make sure this free conference call service worked well. It actually worked perfectly fine.
If you have an Android phone, you can have five people on the line.
Apple probably lets you to six, but anyway. Always one up everybody, right? Anyway, other questions or thoughts or comments? Do I hear any overriding objections at this point or concerns? So is it acceptable that we'll go ahead and put together something in a little bit more detail and some specifics, so make sure that we can address any issues and share that with you? I don't know that I have an exact time frame at this particular point. We can agree upon that, assuming everything else works out. All right? Good. Thank you for your time and attention on that. The next item on the agenda is the proposed field trip.
This is item number 6 in your packet. There's a handy-dandy little map. Basically, what I want to do is just give you sort of the lay of the land. Because every time I go on one of these field trips, people first thing they ask me, well, where are we? Where are we going? So, anyhow, what I wanted to do is, this first one is, as I mentioned earlier, and as also mentioned when the slide was up, what we're going to do, we're going to go out to Thomas Wetland East facility. The idea here is this is a facility like you saw in the photograph. It's very easily sloped. And what it does, it's almost equivalent to what one has called a multi-use facility. It's a concept where the idea was to sit down and say, okay, what can we do in this area that has prevalent amounts of stormwater, has virtually no discharge points? There was an old line running through the area years and years ago, but no one really knew where it came from or where it's going. And so the idea was to say, okay, what can we do here? And so what we strive to do, or what we were planning to do, is we wanted to put a stormwater facility in this location, but then we started thinking a little bit more, and then, or we, the county, started thinking a little bit more, saying, what kind of facility can we put in here? So we decided that it would be best to put in what was a multi-use. Multi-use, in this case, looking at stormwater drainage, basically holding the water there for as long as we can. When it overflows, then it goes out through a pipe to another wetland, to another Thomas Lake facility. It's just called Thomas Lake. So it goes from this facility to another one, and then from there it goes to Burntbridge Creek. The idea is to say, let's hold the water here as long as we can, and then if we can, then what can we do with this location? And what we wanted to do with this location was basically be able to say, can we put some plants in there? Can we add some decorative stuff in there? Can we make it where people in the community, from one part of the community, can talk to the other part of the community? Can we integrate these people? Can school kids go and learn at this facility? Put a bus full of kids out there and let them learn about the wildlife, the urban wildlife in this case, what's going on in their neighborhood. So can we do all this? Can we have it next to the park? And there is a park out there. So the idea is to integrate this so we would have basically stormwater protection, aesthetics, wildlife enhancement, community enhancement, and a park nearby. So it brings all of those different players together, all those different components together at one location. Because none of you were here when I was talking about this about a year and a half ago. But that was one of the concepts that was, you know, Jim was always talking about multi-use and this, that, and the other. And I said, we got the perfect facility for that, the perfect place for that. And that's what we were talking about back then, almost 2 years ago now, we were talking about this issue. So now it's finished. Now it's a good opportunity to go out to this particular site and see what's out there. So what I need to find out before I go any further is to find out what are the dates and times that you folks will be available. I'm talking about the third week of May that you're available. So we staff people are going to go and take a look at Thomas Wetland East ourselves outside of this group, but what I'm talking about, that's going to be on the 17th. But what I'm thinking about is perhaps maybe the 18th or the 19th of the third week, or perhaps the 26th, 27th, or 28th of the fourth week of May. What would be some good times for you?
I'm traveling that entire week of the 18th.
Okay, so that's out for you.
Pretty out of pocket. And so the week of the 25th, which of course Monday is on Memorial Day, 26th, 27th, 28th, is possible.
Okay,
works for me too.
Morning or afternoon? What are the rest of you looking at?
I'm eminently flexible.
Okay.
Are
you?
Okay.
25th would probably work best.
That's a holiday.
Oh, okay.
You're the one, first one out there.
We're all doing it.
Probably got everybody in the night before. 28th, 29th. Mornings work best for me. I can't do afternoons then, but I can do that weekend. I don't know how that works for me.
So what I heard you say is 26th, 27th, or 28th?
I'm sorry, 28th, 29th. 26th and 27th are not good days.
26th.
So, and 29th I'm not
even now. So what I'm hearing then is the 28th? Is it a bingo for 28th?
Morning.
Going once.
Morning.
Twice.
Morning, 28th.
I think it
was
the
same
thing.
Early.
8 o'clock.
I mean, as early as we can do it.
8 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm not getting here any earlier than 8 o'clock. Unless you're going to pay me.
We're counting on you to buy for it.
What's that?
We're counting on you to buy
for it.
We're going to organize and invite you all out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll probably... If you have to use a restroom someplace, I'll provide one of those for you.
So, 28th at 8 a.m.? Yes?
So, we're going to be going to Thomas Wetland East. So, the next one we're going to be going to then is going to be called Mount Vista. Mount Vista is a place where, I mentioned during the slide, where all the water went to one facility. And what happened was the facility got overburdened with so much water, the footing of the hillside gave way, and the whole facility just went right down into Mill Creek. So this is a facility that we're wanting to take a look at. I think it would be very good for you to see it. What we did there, in a nutshell, what we tried to do was to build something that will hold the water long enough that will percolate the water in the ground and then remove a lot of contaminants. But then as it percolates into the ground, it goes into a pipe. and the pipe then goes from the facility from the bottom of one of these stormwater facilities. So if you look at, say, look at the cover page of this thing. So it would be at the bottom of this facility or any of these facilities. There's a pipe at the bottom of it, and then the pipe then connects to the stormwater facility. But it really slows the water down. It doesn't come out of a big rush like a river or stream. It goes down the roads. You've seen those when it rains really hard. It goes right down the river. It goes down the road like a river.
What do you mean by a stormwater facility? Do you mean a treatment center?
Well, what is this? It's one of these.
Oh.
It's a biosoil. So what it does, it literally, the water will come off the roadway. It'll go into one end of this swale. And goes in, and then these are very pitched roads, high pitched. So the angle of the roadway is slanted so much the water literally goes in one end and out the other. And by the time it gets to the end, if it's too full, there's an overflow, like on this second page. There's an overflow. So on the second page, it goes into this overflow, and then it goes directly to the facility. But by the time it gets there, hopefully there's not a lot of water in the system. So we're going to take a look at several of these that morning. So we'll stop at Thomas Whitman East, and then we're going to go to this place called Mount Vista. What this was, since the facility was so blown out, we had to fix the facility, the stormwater facility, the one that blew out. So we fixed that, and then we came back and said, how do we mitigate? How do we minimize that impact? So we said, as a group, with us and Public Works, we sat down and said, okay, how do we minimize that so it doesn't happen again? And that's why we built these stormwater facilities. And in the bottom of these stormwater facilities, and our engineer will come out with us, he can explain in detail how this thing works. What they did, they put a specialized set of soil in these facilities, each one of them, that actually provides for a lot of attenuation of whatever goes into the, whatever is in that stormwater is attenuated by that soil. So it cleans the soil and then goes down to the bottom into this pond or this pipe over to the stormwater facility. So the goal is to make sure that all of this water slowed down and then it goes to the stormwater facility. So it's a very gradual amount of water entering the facility. It's not pushing it beyond the capacity of the facility. So we'll see those. And then after we leave that site, we're going to go to one, it's called the next one, which is called, this heads up, it's called Whipple Creek Greenway. And if you look at the top there, it's actually in the Parkside neighborhood. So we call this Parkside Manor Stormwater Facility. It's another one of those that's very analogous to Thomas Lake. So what we wanted to do is where we can, we want to build these facilities with gradual slope, where there's ability to have more trails, or education, put signage in the area. That's one of the things we've already done, I believe. I'm not trying to be certain, but I think we've either done it or we will be doing it. Signage at each one of these sites. So Thomas Whitman East will have signage to tell people what's in the pond, kinds of plants, kind of birds to look for, that kind of stuff. And the same thing with this Parkside Manor facility as well. We're looking to get education signs up there. So people walk by and they understand what they're looking at.
So what would you guesstimate the amount of time? We started at 8 a.m. We're going to meet.
I'm thinking just out loud. I'm thinking not more than noon, but maybe sooner. Because we're going to be also looking at another facility. We're going to go to one of the penitentiary facilities. And penitentiary is the one I already talked about earlier, where it's style or shape of what it would be in the old days. In the old days, they wouldn't even consider these kinds of facilities. They would just say, heck with it, we're just going to build it, put a fence around it, call it good. And that's what they used to do. And in some cases, that's what they still do, because in some cases, I don't want to go into a lot of details, but in some cases, the law sometimes allows these people who build these facilities to do that. If you own a homeowners association and it was permitted way back when, sometimes the law still allows that, because they were vested on a different set of criteria. But we'll have to wait and see which one our engineer wants to take us to.
So what should the attire and footwear be?
Attire should be for rubber boots, if you want, if you have them. Certainly trail boots or what have you. Jeans, outdoor clothes, whatever you want to wear. Go in a tuxedo if you want, better.
Yeah. Okay?
Okay.
So 28th, 8 a.m., meeting location to be defined?
Meeting location will be here.
Here.
Okay. So what we'll do is I'll get either a van or a couple of cars, and we'll tag team up to these particular sites. And so I'm thinking probably at least two cars, or a van and a car, whatever it turns out to be. But we'll be meeting here behind the building. So contact me if you can't make it. And whoever else is here, we'll get in touch with them.
Sure. Let them know as well.
Okay.
Super. It's part of our ongoing educational efforts, familiarity with what's happening in the...
And then, like, David, I don't know if you're thinking 4 hours is too long, but you want to be part of it, you could probably just meet us at the facility.
Whatever works for you. And if you want to take your own, that's it. And anyone wants to take their own vehicle to any
And
site.
That way you can at least see a couple of them before you have to get on to your other job.
Yeah, I'll see where it is. Okay.
Depending on how you're filling your workload is.
Okay. A couple little odds and ends. For those of you who haven't already provided you with your little skill set, you can email it to me or you can turn it in here. I just want to make sure I have a grasp on what people's comfort levels and backgrounds are on that side of things.
I have no skills.
I would have guessed that, but no. In any case. And for those, and there's only probably a couple of us, this is for, if you want to make any comments, the new people wouldn't, I presume, for Virginia. I had my wife make a little handmade card for her saying thank you. So if you have any comment, if you want to write anything in it, then do so. And so it's probably just the three of us at this point, but I'll make sure that I get it out to her. I'm going to go visit and see how she's doing. She was having some significant health problems. She was having some, do you know what TIAs are?
Strokes.
Mini strokes. And so she was quite concerned. When I went out to visit her one afternoon for several hours, she was going to go in and have some testing done. And I haven't talked to her since, so I thought I would take whatever from the card and I'll get in touch with her and go out and visit her and say hi and drop the card off. Tell her thank you very much for her time. She was with us. She was with the group for nearly 10 years.
Mm-hmm. A long time.
So a nice lady, and I think in her a little bit younger days, she's in her 80s, she was probably pretty darn feisty, which was terrific.
Still drives a
big pickup truck. So at this point in time, we scheduled a few minutes in case any commissioners have any general comments that they want to make about anything. Mark had some interaction with over in Portland, so I think he had a couple comments. But
yeah, as part of community outreach, as a member of the Willamette River Keepers, I went to one of the meetings there that the city of Portland showed up, and it was my primary objective to go in there was to see how the city of Portland is handling community outreach. And they prepared a phenomenal presentation, which is available to you guys if you guys want to look at it. They had a lot of individuals there to answer specific questions that were really kind of highlighted in the videos that Earl showed this evening. But I think they just did an outstanding job. An issue, and we talked about how effective they are in these sorts of community presentations. And the challenge always is participation from the community. The meeting I was at, there were three people. My wife and I were one or two of them. And so it was at a group hub. So it was really there to try to, we're really there to try to attract a wide, disparate group of individuals to learn about these things. And really it's just difficult to get people out to learn about these things. So I found a very great presentation. You guys were able to see it. I think Earl, I think they finally sent a copy to you as well. But it's a good presentation, and I think the challenge is really getting people interested in them, and maybe the fee structure is one way to do that.
Well, one of the things, if I may interject, we actually took this group, not you guys, but a different group, over to the Portland area, because at that time, the chair of the Clean Water Commission was Bill Owen. He was with the Bureau of Environmental Services, and he knew a lot of the places that this community over here on the Clark County side didn't really know where to go to get information. So we actually took this group and some staff and some folks from the Endangered Species Program at Clark County. We all went in a literally school bus over to the Portland area. We had sandwiches and all kinds of stuff on the sixth floor, I believe, of the Metro building, which has a green surface up there, a green roof. So we sat on the green roof, talked about different kinds of strategies, talked about a variety of things, talked about how good Multnomah County is, and then let me see the importance perspective. But anyways, so we were able to talk about a variety of stuff, and then we went on these tours. And one of the tours that we went on, detour that we went on, took us over to a place near Westmoreland where they were doing bricklaying on the street. And they were talking about how do they do basically permeable pavement. So the way that they were doing permeable pavement is that they literally would take these racks and racks of permeable blocks, take a back or a lift and put them on the ground. And then what they would do, they would basically heat the ground up, put them on the ground, and then allow the ground to settle. And then they would use those in particular areas, especially along the edge of the roadway, where the water basically accumulates. So the water would be the curb of the cement, and then these permeable pages on the edge of the roadway, about 3 feet out, and they would go all the way down these roads. And so I think they asked the neighborhood if they would allow that, and the neighborhood said, okay, we'll give it a try. The only problem that they ran into several years later was that weeds would start growing in between the permeable pavement. And so then they ran into the issue of how do they address that? So then they decided that the only way that they could address it was to take basically what would be torches and burn the weeds up and down the roadway. So that was their idea of addressing
that. They charred bricks.
And then they took us...
Since it didn't destroy the roots, they got weeds back again. Yeah.
So then they took us to another place where the neighborhood was involved quite a bit in the protection of the street area. So they took us to some low-impact developments. I think one was called Siskiyou Street, where they took us there. And Dave, you know some of these places. But the idea is that they would show us where the neighborhoods are actually getting involved. So like we're talking about Mount Vista, we were doing almost all the work in there. But what they were able to do in some of these older subdivisions is to get the neighborhoods involved. And then the neighborhoods decided what kind of plants, when they're going to take care of them. And that cut a lot of the cost out of the city's budget to take care of those plants. So what we're striving to do here is sort of emulate that. But we don't necessarily have cooperative neighbors, because one of the people in the Mount Vista area said, I don't want you people around here. I don't want anything with you. I don't want people coming to my neighborhood. It's not a park. So he was getting rather adamant about it. So we said, okay. So what then he decided to do, he said, I'll take care of the situation myself. So he went out to the front yard where the planters are at, where the plants are growing, and then decided to take his weed whacker and wipe everything off.
Oh.
So he took care of the issue there. One of the things that we didn't know was that when we selected the type of plant that we had selected, we didn't know that the nursery had given us plants that were going to grow 4 feet tall. So they turned out to be plants that you would expect to find at the beach. So when I first got there, after this happened, I'm going, okay. Because that's when I was taken back a little bit, because the plants were not what I would expect to see out there either. So I guess that's why the guy was getting a little bit upset. But so what we learned is that when we order plants and want to take care of plants, we want to get the right kinds of plants. But what happened with the Portland area, they asked the people what kind of plants that they want, and then they had a buffet of plants to choose from. So I think what we told our folks over here, and quote me on this, we told our folks, what color plants do you want? Do you want kind of purple plants? Do you want yellow plants? Blah, blah, blah. But that's about the extent they would get. But no one really has talked about the height of a plant.
Yeah, they talked a lot about that during the presentation called Green Streets.
Yep.
So there's a lot of energy there, a lot of interest and drive to do that. One of the things they did talk about was the increase in property values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they studied neighborhoods and communities where they brought in something like Thomas Wetland, and they measured the impact of that. So that there was another piece of data that indicated that there's a reason to do these things.
Right.
Individuals who live around the neighborhood actually gain financially as a result.
That's a very positive.
Very positive. It's beautiful in some of these areas that are built.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Thank you so much for that. That is really good.
Any other general comments? Sir?
One other thing. Other places that we have a stormwater facility, or basically a number of them, is if you go up east of 117 at 99th Street, go out east of that particular location, from right along East Ridge Business Park all the way to 142nd, basically. Both sides of the street are basically planter strips all the way along. If you walk out there today, you'll see flowering roses, you'll see trees and stuff like that, which was a really good benefit for that neighborhood, because what we were talking about initially, they were thinking about putting two big ponds at each end and one in the middle. There's no place to buy it. They would have to buy private property, spend a bunch of money to do it, but then they got smart and they said, well, maybe we can do planter strips along the way. And it's a really attractive location. And you'll also find it in the tabloid here about Mount Vista. You'll see it in that tabloid on the back page here. You'll find that information there too. So on your own time, if you ever want to go and see a good one, a really good one, where it's worked well for the community, it's that location.
When I was driving back out to Battleground this morning, I was probably doing my workout, there's a detention facility just north of 119 mm-hmm. on the east side. It was cleaned up in the last couple of months. Okay. Cut some trees down there. Anyway, there were three news trucks there doing a broadcast of something right at that facility. I didn't know if anybody heard anything. No. I'm going to look into it.
I saw a little clip on that on the news, you know, where they were,
didn't know what it was about.
People were mowing it and cleaning it up, and, you know, and the they were making a big deal about the owners of the development of the property had pitched together to clean all this up. And
because that's right adjacent to that Langler Dairy land, which is, you know, this whole land bank. Mm-hmm. Discussion situation. So, all right. Any other comments? Or
so, if the budget needs to meet the permit requirements is $1.5 million with these new fees, how much is that going to generate? How much revenue is that going to generate? The fee increase.
Well, what it will generate is on an annual basis.
Mm-hmm.
About $6.8 million is what it's going to generate on an annual basis.
More than meet the deficit.
I think we'll be okay in 2015 and 16.
But that's not putting money aside for the requirements in 2015.
No, nothing in the bank.
I have one more comment.
Sure.
It's been kind of crawling around the back of my brain. What we seem to be doing up until now is playing catch up, you know, from the lawsuit and other things. And at some point, I hope we can kind of shift into second gear and start looking at maybe proactivity. You know, what's a 20-year plan? Eventually, it always happens. If we continue, if Southwest Washington continues to grow, or Vancouver continues to grow, the sprawl is going to stop, and you're probably going to start rising, you know, upward.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we have a 20-year growth management plan, but I don't think we have a 20-year environmental control plan. Of course, like they said, we never know, you know, how many hundreds of pounds of regulations are going to be filed on top of that. But, you know, in the back of my mind, I keep wondering, is there some way we could maybe mitigate some of the future efforts by being proactive now? And I'm just throwing that out, putting it out there that maybe that's something we should be keeping in mind.
I think your point is well taken, because a few years ago we were looking at something similar to that. It was just basically a concept where we were talking about, okay, if we take a watershed, let's get back to watershed planning. Mm-hmm. Watershed planning, you look at the area and you say, what's going on in that particular location? And so you say, nothing's really going on right now. What can we do before it happens, like what you're talking about? Make some plans before it happens.
Yeah. I think that's the best way to control what happens in the future is to try to look at it right now rather than wait until we have a crisis.
And one of the things that's in this permit talks about right now, it says, thou shall look at a watershed plan. Basically, don't quote me how many acres, but anyways, it's supposed to be a certain size. And the one that we're looking at right now is called the Whipple Creek Watershed. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at that area because we have data that talks about habitat. We have data that talks about water quality. We have data that talks about extreme conditions, so on and so forth. And that's the one we're working on right now.
Should we be looking at something like that along with the girl?
Right now, it's so tentative.
Okay.
And so what we want to do, we're having to make sure that we are crossing the T's and dotting the I's to meet the Department of Ecology's requirements.
Sure.
Okay.
Any other comments? We will go back to the public. Nobody in the public for additional testimony, since it's our second session. We'll make sure we do that. So, with that in mind, if there are no other comments, no other business to be conducted, then we will close the meeting on May 6, 2015 at 8:25 p.m. Thank you for attending. We made it.
Yes, you know.